All right, after yesterday's Kevin Durant to the Warriors stunner, we are back with your regularly scheduled summer programming, every signing, cap space situations on every team, summary of the remaining free agents. We got all that since we last recorded on those subjects on July 2nd. We are sponsored today by our friends at Naked Labs with the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. Also, Indochino, custom men's suits for as little as $3.99 using that familiar cap space code. And also, I wanted to, again, reiterate my advice. These are some long podcasts. Obviously, we got a ton to get through these days. So I really recommend listening on a faster speed if you have that available on your podcast player, or getting a new podcast player if it doesn't support that. Still, the place to start, I think, is with new news on the Warriors since we recorded on KD yesterday, starting with how are they rounding out their roster.
So their structural dynamics were about the same as what they were when I laid it out back in November, and really that was a choice between one of Bogut, Iguodala, and Harrison Barnes. They chose Iguodala, and so that means that Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut are going to Dallas in separate transactions. And then they separately had to choose between Sean Livingston and Azili. They chose Livingston by guaranteeing his contract and letting Azili become an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, the trade of Bogut is just into the Mavs cap space with his slightly over $11 million per year salary. It sounds like the Warriors are getting back a nominal top 55 protected second, basically the absolute least that you can trade in return. There were some discussion by Calvin Watkins that the Rockets were trying to get into the Bogut Derby. There were some teams that I think could use him just because he's on an expiring contract and your commitment is only for a year, and he does provide some rim protection. I certainly would have looked into him as, say, the Trailblazers, but I think pretty decent for the Mavs, especially because while there might be other centers on the market who were going for about that amount, getting him for only 1 year at going to be age 32 is pretty solid for them. And then, of course, Barnes now will just be signing there as an unrestricted free agent for his maximum 4 years, $94 million. And then the Warriors immediately recovered with Zaza Pachulia for the room exception. That does not count against their cap space until they do all their other transactions. That's why it's an exception. So 1 year, which is amazing that they got him for to do only 1 year, and $2.9 million for Pachulia, who, although he's a different player, probably played better than Bogut at times last year.
Yeah, he's a wonderful fit. It still is amazing to me that Dallas was able to basically get him for nothing from Milwaukee, considering how well he played for Milwaukee, and I actually think that his absence was a big part of what led to their defense falling apart. He's a nice player, and while he probably will start with the Warriors, my instinct is that they will not start the lineup that will eventually be named, that they will close with that. So I'm guessing he'll play 20 to 25 minutes a game in the regular season, and they'll eventually get another center with one of these minimum spots probably.
Yeah, it would be nice to for them to have a center who has some athleticism, can protect the rim, can get up for some alley-oops as well. And granted, that's a player who's usually not available at the minimum, but Pachulia does add a nice element with his offensive rebounding, which is something that Bogut had kind of begun to eschew as he just became more and more immobile, especially running the floor. I think Pachulia just overall will play harder than Bogut. His passing skills are not quite as good as Bogut's, but still pretty good. He was good in the high post, can make a jump shot as well, which Bogut could not. And while he doesn't protect the rim, he does take charges. He does move his feet pretty well. Always a guy who rated much better by some of the on-off based metrics defensively. I think the Bucks, really, if you saw how badly their defense declined last year, it would be a perfect example of that. So Pachulia, just an absolute coup at that price. Supposedly, Zach Lowe tweeted that executives were texting him saying, complaining about how they got him for so cheap. Well, maybe executives, you could trade for him when he's on a $5 million contract. Last year, the Mavs got him for absolutely nothing. Or you could offer him maybe, you know, more than that, maybe more than 5 days into the free agency process, so he's not sitting around there waiting for the room exception. Another instance here of a really good team being able to get some ring chasers. Pachulia has never even been to the conference finals, hasn't ever even sniffed the conference finals. I think that's very important to him at this point in his career. So what do they got now in terms of the rest of their books and some other potential options?
So there are two different things that they can and probably need to do. So really, everybody else that they are going to bring back is going to be on either a minimum contract or have a minimum hold. And so this is, so you have the minimum additions, that'll be guys, you know, that, that come in for whatever, for their minimum, whatever that is. It can't be longer than 2 years. And then the other one, which is something we talked about but should clarify, is the possibility with Brandon Rush and James Michael McAdoo, because both of those players have minimum holds because they played on that last year, but the Warriors retain early bird rights on them, which means that the Warriors can sign them up to $6.1 million minimum of 2 years. And that would be in some ways for continuity, but in some ways also for salary matching for a potential trade.
Yeah, I think much more the latter than the former. And as we said yesterday, if they do sign with early bird rights, you can't be traded until January 15th. If you just sign normally as a free agent, you cannot be traded until December 15th. So that's why you rarely see trades before that. If you are a rookie, you can be traded after 30 days. That was the Andrew Wiggins in 2014 rule, if you're trying to remember that one. I think that we haven't heard anything about that yet, so maybe they are not going in that direction. I certainly hope that they do, if they can get those guys on 1 year for $6 million a year, and it seems like that would probably would beat the market for those guys, given kind of how things have slowed down and who is still out there. Potential center options for them now in more of the backup realm. Dewayne Dedmon has been talked about for them. If I were Dedmon, whose qualifying offer was rescinded by the Magic, he had some experience with the Warriors. He played on the Santa Cruz Warriors in 2014. Even if he had higher offers elsewhere, I would still go there just on a one-year deal, because that's just going to make him look so good, and they're going to need to play him. So I think like there's no other place he could be where he's going to look as good. So I think that would be a nice investment for his future, even if he would be making a little bit less money. Anyone else that you like for them potentially as a minimum guy at center?
Willie Reed, if he's willing to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an option.
Can I say not Anderson Varejão?
I mean, I assume that Varejão will come back. It'd be interesting to see, too, whether Barbosa is willing to come back for the minimum, which is now all that they can pay him. I mean, they definitely need someone at backup shooting guard. I mean, I do think Rush can still play, but we'll see who else they get. And this team doesn't have to be complete. That's why I'm advocating for them signing those guys for matching trade salaries, so they can go after some of the people we talked about yesterday. I did get one thing wrong yesterday in our delirium. They do not have early bird rights on Ian Clark. He was only on the team for 1 year, so they could not pull that same trick with him as they did on McAdoo and on Rush, because they do have early bird rights on those guys. But maybe Clark could come back, and they might, maybe the, if Barbosa doesn't come back, they'll just promise him the backup shooting guard spot. Also, D. Lee was appeared on a video on TMZ from Nobu Restaurant in Malibu, in which he sort of said, well, hey, we're trying to work things out for him to maybe come back. I assume that that will only happen if nobody else offers him significantly more than that. And Lee, while he can't stop anybody, could be fine as a potential backup center, and they could just decide that they're going to outscore people with their second unit. So some interesting notes on the Warriors, I just thought, to kind of get what the initial public perception of them is now after this on record. Per Bovada, their over-under on wins next year is 67.5. How does that sound to you?
I think it'll be under, not because of talent level, but just because of motivation.
Yeah, maybe so, though, with KD there. I mean, I think they'd be hard-pressed to win less than 65, I think. But we thought that about the 2011 Heat, but that's a interesting comparison with the Heat. I think, number one, this whole team has been together already. And number two, they just fit together so much better than those guys did. Like, Wade and James basically played the exact same game, high pick and roll, ball in the hands. Neither of those guys at the time were great three-point shooters. Bosch, even at the time, was not a three-point shooter. That didn't really evolve into his game until much later on. And then you remember they had Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem supposedly filling out their team, but those guys immediately got hurt and were kind of, neither of them were really ever the same as players. And then they had no real shooting. They were starting like Mike Bibby and Joel Anthony in the playoffs. I mean, and they probably even would have lost to the Bulls in the conference finals if Haslem hadn't come back and suddenly miraculously recovered from a foot injury. So this Warriors team has way more depth. They fit together way better because Clay and Steph and KD are such good shooters that being on the floor just helps. They help each other with that, and you can't leave them. Those Heat didn't have anybody who's a role player in the mold of Andre Iguodala or Draymond Green, that's for sure, either. So I think that they project to be much, much better than that Heat team, even before we kind of saw them in action. They disappointed that year. I think their over-under was like 65 wins. So, yeah, I think 67.5 is probably about right for them. And then a couple other
Can I make one small note on that? I think that they'll also, I'm sure they'll be managing minutes in the regular season, but they might be ahead by so much so often that they're just playing their second unit guys for like the entire second half, and they won't need to play the starter, not the whole second half, you know, I'm being facetious, but you know, like a lot of it, so that in those games you can get those guys rest, and so you don't have to make that priority decision.
Yeah, and they'll probably overperform their point differential too, because down the end of games they'll just go with Green at center and just be able to completely destroy guys. Any close game, you have to imagine they're going to win. Maybe they'll be a little bit in the way of growing pains, but probably more in the sense of like an overpassing, over unselfishness type of thing, which you'll see with like Team USA at some point. A couple other notes on fallouts for this, just capture what the conventional wisdom is here. People are assuming that KD is going to average more points a game than Curry. I think that's probably correct. And based on what the odds are here, the Thunder are over under 47.5 wins, although Russell Westbrook must play the first game of the season for action. I would probably take the under on that right now for the Thunder, considering they won 55 last year and they're losing Kevin Durant. And then, will Russell Westbrook be traded during the regular season? Odds are substantially in favor. Yes is minus 300. No is plus 200. So that's pretty remarkable. And it says during the regular season. So that, I guess that doesn't include beforehand. But and then odds to win the championships, championship. The Warriors are at 5-7, Cavs 7-2, Spurs 8-1, and then you go down to the Celtics and Clippers at both at 22-1. What do you think of those odds?
Well, I think it's surprising that the Clippers' odds didn't go down very much, because we'll talk about their offseason, but I think that they just don't fit as well now in the system. But I guess maybe with the Spurs getting potentially weaker, maybe that does it. But the Warriors at 5-7, I said they had a 70% chance. I'm not great at translating odds, but I think that's relatively close.
Yeah, I said 65 on yesterday's program, and that seems about right to me, pending what these other moves are. It looks like the Spurs are going to get Gasol. We'll get to that in a second. But first, I want to tell you about one of the more revolutionary products that I've been associated with, one that I was really excited about, another one here that I found out about and actually went to the CEO. I ordered it. It's the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. I actually became aware of it when a friend of mine, a doctor, shared it with me, and I immediately bought one. It's basically a body scanner. You step onto a scale that then turns you around in a circle in front of a mirror that has sensors embedded in it. And so you get a 3D scan of your body that gives you a ton of information. Number one, it gives you measurements for every part of your body. Number two, it tells you what your body fat percentage is in a very accurate way, more accurate than some of the more traditional forms of testing. And then the next time you get scanned, it'll do a comparison with the heat map. So when you're working out, motivation could be difficult for those first couple of weeks. Maybe you stay the same weight, you don't look any different in the mirror, but this can actually tell you that, yeah, you're starting to make progress. It shows you where you've lost fat, where you've gained muscle. So even if your weight stays the same, you can tell that you're making progress or that your body fat percentage has gone down. And that is just such a powerful tool to motivate you to continue working out. I went in, I tested out the prototype about a week and a half ago at their headquarters in Redwood City, California, which is right near where I live, and was just so impressed with both the product and the company as a whole. Really excited about being associated with these guys. It's going to be available in the spring of 2017 for $1,000, but if you order now, you can get it for $699, and you only have to put down a $95 deposit. So you can find out more about them at naked.fit/capspace. Capspace, easy to remember because we talk about it all the time on the program. A URL for this one, naked.fit/capspace, to find out more. So for Dallas, our friend Jeff Stotts, who does great injury work, he tweeted out that he was hoping that Dallas would sign Seth Curry and then trade for Jason Thompson and sign Gerald Green so that they could trot out a lineup next year of Curry, Thompson, Barnes, Green, and Bogut. And then they signed Seth Curry to what sounds like the room exception. So they are close to that.
I don't know. I know since we have an NBA Reddit audience that I don't know if he beat them to that, but it's a great idea. And but more importantly, I'm very impressed with what Dallas did to build their team. I mean, they went from being, we talked about it as kind of being this big open chasm of a team to being competitive. I mean, I don't think they're going to like win a playoff series probably, but I do think they're going to make the playoffs.
We'll see about that. I need to spend some time really thinking about that, and we will obviously have some podcasts on that. We'll do our tiers. We'll do our over-unders, obviously, when those come out in October. But I do think that they've recovered reasonably nicely. We'll see what Barnes can be now. The competing theories on him is, number one, he didn't have a chance to really spread his wings offensively. I think that's actually not true. He's had plenty of chances for that. Or that he is just going to really fall off a cliff without getting a ton of open threes the way he had before. But he could take Parsons' place in the sense that he starts at the three, and then when they rest Dirk, he can play as a backup four. I think Bogut, while he's not particularly mobile anymore, can't bring it every night, at least protects the rim better than some of the guys that they've had in there recently as a starting center. And then Dirk now is reported is returning on a 2-year, $40 million deal. They will do that using his cap hold, which was a little bit over $12 million. And then they're also going to bring back Deron Williams, who on a 1-year, $10 million deal that seemed very cheap. I think that D-Will's just overall reputation as somewhat of an ornery guy maybe hurt his value around the league. But Dallas will also have early bird rights on him afterwards, and he's still getting paid by the Nets. As it turns out, now the final math on that, he lost about $1 million. He gave back 16, and then he made 5 last year and 10 this year. But he does at least avoid the income tax. So probably about a wash, and he got to play for at home and a team that he liked, so probably well worth it for him to leave that money on the table with Brooklyn, and then it let Brooklyn get under the tax last year as well. And then what else did they do?
They re-signed Dwight Powell. So Dwight Powell got a 4-year, about $37 million deal. Again, with all these, it's going to depend. And he has a final year player option. And what made this more interesting now, as opposed to what it was then, is it's too big for the early bird exception, so it has to be done with cap space, which means that it can't fit in with everything else that they're doing. And one thing I wanted to mention was...
Wait, you said they can't fit in with everything else that they're doing? You
mean
because
they could go over the top, right? Yeah, they have to fit it in with cap space. So because if they could go over the top, then they have a little bit more flexibility. Granted, that
And the most they could have offered him with early bird, we've seen this with a couple other contracts, Lance Thomas too, which we'll get to, would have been 4 years and $27.5 million. So that's why this ends up being higher. And then he was also, it's important to remember, was Arenas limited. So same thing as Jordan Clarkson, same thing as Tyler Johnson, who we'll get to, where another team would have been limited in what they could offer him for the first couple of years. But it sounded like there was going to be another offer out there for him. He's 24, did get some decent minutes as a backup. If they believe he can grow, especially with his shot, and play, you know, as sort of a backup 4 or 5 on the second unit, they've always been fine playing with an undersized center on their second unit. So, I guess this is okay value for him. What do you think of that?
I think it's okay. I think it values him at more of like a key rotation player, fringe starter, and I'm not completely sold on him there. But it's not horrendous in any way, shape, or form. One thing I really do want to mention with him, though, is that apparently I was getting caught up in something else, but there was some discussion about him getting a no-trade clause. Dwight Powell cannot get a no-trade clause because you have to be in the NBA for 8 or more seasons, and you have to have been 4 or more seasons with that team in order to get in a trade. That's why they're so rare, because you have to fit both of those criteria at the bare minimum.
Yeah, and an even dorkier note on that is that you can, even if you're returning to a team, as long as you played 4 seasons with them previously, you're still allowed to. So LeBron coming back to the Cavs could have a no trade clause. Like Horace Grant came back to the Magic in 2001 or 2 or something, and he was able to get one because he'd been on the team for 4 years in a separate stint.
Yeah.
Before then.
We still have Seth Curry.
So, well, so they're basically done. The way I have the math is they're about $200,000 over if they start Barnes and Powell and Williams all at their reported salaries to also fit in Dirk's cap hold. So I think out of those 3 guys, they're just going to have to carve out, $200,000 between the 3 of them. I'm sure that they will be able to impose upon them to potentially do that. And then you mentioned Curry at the room exception. He'll fit into a point guard rotation that includes Devin Harris, who really plays as more of a 2 these days, J.J. Barea, and D-Will. You have to imagine Ray Felton now will not be returning to Dallas. But 2 for 6 for Seth Curry after he was renounced by the Kings and his qualifying offer pulled, which I would not have done if I were them. That's fantastic value, though, I think, for Curry, a guy who has a lot of offensive upside, even if he's not really the greatest defender.
Yeah, and he can play. I think he can do a little bit on and off the ball, and Carlisle will use that well. I think we might end up seeing him play with Devin Harris fairly frequently, which I would be excited to see.
So in terms of space, they're about done now. They're going to be down to minimums. They've got a decent wing rotation between Barnes, Justin Anderson, and Wes Matthews, and then at center, they'll probably try to get some other minimum guys. They would have had to have dumped JaVale McGee, who was making $1.4 million but was non-guaranteed until July 12th. And remember, none of these have actually happened yet. You know, you can't do anything officially until July 7th for all but a few transactions. But they could always bring him back on the minimum and guarantee him if they wanted to, unless JaVale has some other offers. They also, I think, wanted to hold on to Salah Mejri. And so if they wanted to dump him, he is as a guaranteed date of July 12th, and they could open up that extra $300,000 I was talking about to fit in Dirk's cap hold and the other guys at their reported salaries. But Mejri as a backup center is making good money at the minimum, so hopefully they won't have to do that. And it's been reported that they do not want to. All right, is that it on them?
Yeah.
All right, so Oklahoma City, more has come out about them. They haven't signed anybody. But the biggest thing was a report from David Aldridge that Russell Westbrook is not interested in renegotiating and extending. And Aldridge went on to tweet that, you know, it made no financial sense for him. I certainly understand why he wouldn't want to do it, especially because you're locking in there for longer and he may want to leave. But there are scenarios in which it would make sense for him to do that, because you remember he's getting an extra $9 million this year that he wouldn't be getting. So let's say he were to renegotiate extend just for 1 year. Up to the maximum, so he'd be making $9 million more this year. Then the next year, he wouldn't go quite up to the max, but he would get a raise off of this year's max, so he'd be making 28.5 instead of 30.2. So he still is making about $8 million more over those 2 years if he renegotiated and extended for 1 year. And then, of course, and he could still then could hit the market in 2018 as a 29-year-old and hope to lock in either for 4 or 5 years at that point. That's probably,
I
would
max.
Guess. Right, yeah. That's the other thing, too. He could get up to the 10-year max, which would be close to $35 million a year. So there is a scenario which, by renegotiating and extending, he could make a lot more money. And also that at age 29, for someone like him, that's probably the perfect time to get back onto the market to still ensure that you could get the full 5-year max or 4-year max. But again, I mean, he's going to make a ton of money either way, and I think he might value his freedom more. But it wasn't like some ridiculous suggestion that he could do that. He actually, there are ways that he could play that where he could make a lot more, but it looks like that is not going to happen. The other interesting report was that they thought Horford would have come there if KD had returned. You did not buy that.
No, and there are a couple big reasons. One is that Durant almost, like, it seems really likely that he would have signed a 1+1, and so the argument I made in the mock-off season and have been making forever is that, since it was posed, is that Horford wouldn't want to commit there if Russ and KD aren't committing. And Horford, I don't think he was going to sign a 1+1. He's later in his process than they are. And also, Horford decided before Durant did, so unless he knew that Durant wasn't coming back, and the contract was basically what it was, and also, as we dealt with, kind of as we were through the mock-off season, it would have been very difficult to make that happen. They would have had to find a taker for Enes Kanter. They would have had to find a taker for Ersan Ilyasova, which would have been, that part would have probably been easy. But there were a lot of machinations that would have had to have happened, and they would have had to have happened really, really quickly. And a Kanter trade in particular is not easy.
Yeah, I don't know who really would have wanted him necessarily. But anyway, Oklahoma City now, in terms of space, if they hold on to Deion Waiters, $12 million cap hold, they've got about $7 million. They dump him, they get to about $20 million, and they could get to $23 million if they were to move on from Morrow, who I actually think they need now. He's non-guaranteed at $3.5 million. He's also a guy I think that could potentially get traded if they begin to disappoint this year. All right, San Antonio, we speculated on it that Gasol would go there for about $15 million, that there would be a DA trade. That would open up about $17 million with Manu's cap hold and Duncan retiring and not getting any of his money, which he can certainly agree to do. They could also agree to pay him if they wanted to, but they're not obligated to if he retires. And so that with that $17 million, that would leave 2 years, $30 million for Gasol. That they have not found a Diaz trade yet. However, what do you think are the destinations for him?
My favorite one.
So he's making $7 million, which has now already guaranteed this year. That was a guaranteed date of the 30th of June, and then he's making a non-guaranteed 7.5 next year.
My two favorites, and I have them by a pretty significant margin, are the Utah Jazz and the Boston Celtics. I think depending on what Boston does with their space, I think he's a nice fit for just their overall just big man rotation. But Utah, I think it would be really nice. He has personal chemistry with Rudy Gobert. Use him as kind of the third spoke in a big man rotation. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think there are plenty of bad teams that might just try to take him into space as well. Utah, I don't know how much he would play necessarily. He was pretty bad in the playoffs last year, but also was limited coming off of a groin injury. Perhaps I think a team like Philly maybe could use him. But remember, when he goes onto a bad team, we saw what happened in Charlotte, where he was basically got released by the worst team in NBA history in 2011-12 because he just kind of checks out mentally, lets himself get out of shape. So you probably need to send him somewhere good. But I think all of those are reasonable options. He might not play necessarily in Utah because they want to play Trey Lyles. They're going to have Joe Johnson. They're going to want to play Gordon Hayward at the four and backup units as well. But, you know, adding to some more versatility, Utah, I think, would have to dump somebody, though. That would probably be Tibor Pleiss, who is guaranteed at $3 million, but was not looking like he was going to be an NBA contributor, at least yesterday when I saw him live at Summer League anytime soon. So I think they would be willing to move on from him. Also for San Antonio, it's been discussed that they're maybe adding 2011 second-rounder Davis Bertans, who's a shooter out of Latvia, and don't know if that's going to happen for sure, but we've heard noise about that from a couple of kind of less mainstream sources, but that'll happen a lot with some of the guys coming over from Europe, and he won't count anything against the cap. Presumably he'll sign just for the minimum. And there's also talk that Livio Jean-Charles, their 2013 first-rounder, who then tore his ACL, I think, after that, and has not really played particularly well, I think, in the French League. He averaged like 7.4 points or something in the French League, as best I can remember. Doesn't strike me as someone that they really want, but maybe they made an agreement that they'd bring him over at some point, and so he actually would count against the cap, and he could just agree not to sign that letter saying he won't come over, and then they're forced to either just lose his rights or offer him a contract. And then DeJounte Murray has not signed either yet. That might just be because they don't want to sign him because he's going to go up to 120% of the rookie scale. It could be because they are trying to extract a concession from him on that, and he's represented by Clutch Sports, actually. So that'll be an interesting battle if that, in fact, is the case. But he is not playing in Summer League, which was too bad.
There's a point I want to make here, which is why it was important that they cut the moratorium down. And it's because it really helps Vegas Summer League happen, because a lot of these teams that are trying to use their cap space quickly but want to maximize that 20% raise that guys can get off the rookie scale, if it was a two-week moratorium, those guys basically wouldn't play in Summer League. And so by having it be the 7th, it hurts Orlando and it hurts Utah, but I think Murray's going to be ready to play by early in Vegas Summer League.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, but if they're trying to get him to take less than 120% of scale, Clutch Sports will not be interested in that. I can tell you that much.
I don't think they'll fight that too hard, but I could be wrong.
I mean, there are teams where the guys who aren't actually signed yet will play. They'll come to that agreement. Other teams, like the Lakers for a while, they didn't want to do that. They think they've kind of relented on that. So there are some times where they'll play and other times where they won't necessarily, depending on what the vagaries of the situation are. For Manu, presumably they are keeping his cap hold on. If they are going to pay Gasol that money, they cannot keep his cap hold on, which is $5.3 million, and pay Tim Duncan his salary as well. Manu's agent, Herb Rudoy, was quoted in the market saying that he is well aware of what the market is. Certainly a team like Boston, which could clear up to about $15 million in space, would love to offer him 1 year, $15 million. And frankly, given Manu's sacrifices last year playing at the room exception, for example, I think that the Spurs should absolutely do kind of what Dirk got. It doesn't cost them anything other than money. They're not going to be close to the tax. So they might as well, they should at least pay him like 1 year, $15 million, if they're going to do right by him, in my opinion.
Yeah, and considering they're going to sign Gasol with cap space, and they're going to, because of that, they're probably going to shed some of their other additions like Boban from last year. I don't even think that's going to push them into the tax. I mean, I haven't run the full math on it, but they might as well.
Yeah, the other option would be that they Manu could again take less, and that would give them some money to re-sign David West as well. They are down to now their room exception. They cannot give the full MLE to either Boban or West. If Boban were to get even like a two-year offer sheet, I think they still have his restricted rights because his qualifying offer was pretty low. It's just a little bit over $1 million. But any team that comes in basically with an offer sheet that's like, you know, 2 years, $6 million or something, which would be awesome for him, that's probably the Spurs would have no way to match that, I think, at this point. So some team should absolutely do that. I mean, even if you're only playing him 10 minutes a game, which I think, as KP called him, he's more of a curio on the mock off season podcast. That may be true, but
is that because he's the size of a cabinet? Like a really freaking big cabinet?
But some teams should absolutely make that offer on the 7th once they actually can. And Boban might have trouble finding suits because he is pretty enormous, but he could go to Indochino because he could get a custom made suit for $399. Using our familiar cap space code, which we talk about all the time, obviously, especially this time of year, that cap space code can get you any premium suit for just $399, up to 50% off at Indochino.com. I am not quite as oddly shaped as Boban is, but I am still, I'm pretty tall, but whenever I get something that has long enough sleeves or the pants long enough off the rack, it's always way too big on the rest of my body. They try to tailor it for me at the department store. It never really works that well. So what I did was I went into an Indochino store, or you can take your 14 measurements at home. They have a guide how to do that on the website. Send it into them. 3 to 4 weeks later, you get your suit. You can customize it with the lapels, a monogram, the lining, single-breasted, double-breasted. They have probably about 50 different suit designs. Same thing with shirts, too. Shirts, you can get them for about $100 as well, a custom-made shirt, which is a great price. So go to Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE for any premium suit, just $399. You get free shipping. You also get free returns. You send it back once. If they'll try and fix it for you. If that doesn't work, then you just can return it, no questions asked. So it's a fantastic product. Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE. Indochino, your look, your way. Well, this next one is got to be the greatest triumph in the history of the mock off season.
Yeah, imagine how crazy it'd be if they get Boban too. I mean, granted, the contract won't be nearly the same. But yeah, I mean, so in the mock off season, after all of the other point guards signed, I was the Chicago Bulls and went, crap, we might as well sign Rondo, and got him to a 1 year, $13 million deal with a second year, the equivalent that you can do of a mutual option. So that means that it's non-guaranteed, but it has a player option, and I'm sure we'll go into more substance on that. And hey, Rajon Rondo, 2 years, $28 million, exactly the same structure.
Incredible that he is on the Bulls. There are tons of other point guards out there that I would have rather had than him for this team. He was so bad defensively last year. Brandon Jennings signed for 1 year, $5 million. I would much rather have Brandon Jennings. I would have rather had Seth Curry, too, at least someone who can shoot the ball. And Rondo can set guys up, but he's a pretty miserable fit with Jimmy Butler, because Butler, not a great shooter. Rondo, we know how bad of a shooter he is. I don't think that the defensive culture under Fred Hoiberg is going to get him to defend when he has been really bad on that end ever since tearing his ACL and just completely checked out last year as he went to pad his stats. He's on another 1 year deal, so he'll be doing that same crappy stat padding again, and he's a year older now. It is really just not a good signing whatsoever, I think. And he's not exactly some great locker room guy or influence either. If they decide to start playing Jerian Grant over him, he's going to carp about it. I really think that they could have done much, much better than him. And you know, for everyone who is loving that Rose trade for Chicago, it just gets worse and worse when you see what they've done afterwards.
I disagree with you a little bit, more on just kind of part of the concept and of the substance. I think that they should have used their cap space better the whole way through, you know, gone after a center. I agree with all of that. However, given the constraints that they have put on themselves, which is a construct I hate broadly, they did a decent job, because what Rondo, like, what I think is the important part of this season for them is more evaluation. And I think having Rondo makes it easier to figure out what you have, not in Jimmy Butler, it's worse for that, but in McDermott and Portis and
They'll be able to figure out which of their players can beat double teams because nobody's going to guard Rondo.
Yeah, I mean, you,
it's real important for the evaluation.
So you think that like playing Calderon in that spot? I mean, realistically, I think
Calderon is a 40% 3-point shooter.
He's a 40% 3-point. He does that, but I think as a passer at this point, Rondo is better. And
yeah, he's still a great passer.
He's a better defender than Calderon, as much as Rondo has gone away from his peak. And I think that is a point that I wanted to bring up with this, and this isn't really a Rondo-specific thing, but I've really been fascinated in the overall conversations with a lot of guys about how sticky perceptions are. And Rondo is a great example of that with his defense, that there is this, he has a reputation as a very good defender because he was. He absolutely was, and saying that he isn't now is in no way denigrating his past. But those things can be really sticky, that they just, a perception that lingers. Another guy like this for me is Al Jefferson. I think that Al Jefferson now is not what he was 2 years ago. So I've been fascinated by that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think that watching a lot of these teams last year made me more aware of how these players had changed as they've aged.
So let me give you a list of guys that I would have rather given this contract to on the point guard market. Langston Galloway, for example, now has been made a free agent from the Knicks, which we'll get to, a full free agent. They rescinded his qualifying offer. Absolutely would have rather had him, especially because they desperately need someone who can defend a point guard now on this team. I mean, maybe Grant can do it okay, but he's pretty young, and we don't know how much he's going to play. Galloway could kind of be what Etuan Moore was for them last year, even. And I think I would have much rather given him this contract. There are Gerald Henderson just signed for 2 years and $18 million. You know, would he have done one for 12 or even I wouldn't have minded having him for a second year as well on that deal. That's a great deal. Grievous Vasquez, I think, would have been maybe not better than Rondo, but you probably could have gotten him for cheaper as well. And that's not to mention the idea that they could have gone out in the big man market, the wing market, and done way better than this, I think, also. So it's just, and then when you throw in the chemistry aspects, the locker room aspects, I really just, I can't believe they did this. He seems like such an anti-Bulls player, and it's hard for me to imagine that he is going to be a helpful player for them. He certainly, I don't think, was helpful for the Kings last year.
Let's go through, though, what they still have left. So they have about a little less than $12 million left that they can spend in whatever way. And to me, they still need another center. I mean, of course, it'd be great if it was a starting guy, but more likely it'll be a backup, just because unless they really want to try one of their other players, Taj, Portis, or whatever, at center. And I would love to see them get another swingman, whether that be more of a, like, you're going to get somebody limited, but maybe more of either a shooter or a stopper type, just go hard after a specialty and just see how it works.
Yeah, they do have a lot of guys on this team now, and I do think it's not impossible that they could be better than expected on offense, just because maybe Denzel Valentine will be better, Bobby Portis could take a step forward, Mirotić, McDermott, those guys could be a little bit better than you expect, maybe Cristiano Felicio. Like, they have enough young guys that I think some of them could take a step forward on offense. It's just I don't see any way that they're ever going to stop anybody with this team. I mean, and if they could have gotten one more defensive guard, then maybe you could have played like Galloway at the point at times, let Jimmy Butler handle the ball. Then you still got Taj Gibson and Lopez together or Felicio. You know, you could actually start to get a unit that could defend a little bit. If I were another team, I would be trying to trade for Tony Snell, see what I could get out of him in the last year of his rookie contract. I mean, again, a guy who defends his position okay and shoots pretty well on threes, like, that is a pretty valuable player if he's in the right system, and it seems like he's really fallen out of favor with the Bulls here. Mike Dunleavy surely will now be available as well. They might want to see a little bit more from him in terms of being healthy. And then, of course, Taj Gibson in the last year of his contract making $9 million. Dunleavy is making, I think, a little bit less than $5 million. So all of those guys could potentially be trade bait, and some of those guys are, I think, a reason why I think Golden State might want to look into trying to get Snell, and he's not really making anything. We'll see what the Bulls' price on him is, but especially if he starts the season out of the rotation, like, Snell could be someone, I think, who, as a backup shooting guard in like 10 or 15 minutes a game, who could come in and defend a little bit, shoot threes, could help teams. So we'll see what happens with this Bulls team. They have a lot of guys. Some of them could get better. I just don't think that, like, their defense can be any better than average, and it's hard to imagine they're going to be some offensive powerhouse. So, you know, they might make the playoffs still. I'm not going to foreclose on that, but I think any sort of upside of being a home court advantage team, which I think they might have had if they'd kept Rose and signed a defensive center, I think that's gone now.
We'll move on to the Washington Wizards, who, after they, you know, kind of after they missed out on Al Horford, re-signed Jan Mahimi, they made a series of notable things. So they signed Andrew Nicholson to a 4-year.
I love what they've done, by the way.
I do too.
Since even Mahimi, I think, like, they recovered. I'll let you say what they are, but I just want to start that off. I think this has been fantastic.
I agree. So Andrew Nicholson, 4 years, $26 million, fourth year player option. Then they traded their 2021 second round pick for Trey Burke. Then they signed.
Yeah, who I think actually could be a totally competent backup point guard and really made some strides. I think, like, again, some of these teams that, like, for example, like Detroit with Ish Smith. I mean, I think, like, Burke is making, you know, not very much. He's making like $2 million a year. Like Detroit, I would have made that trade. Orlando, you know, I don't think that, like, Burke is going to be worse than DJ Augustin this year, and he certainly is going to be probably, you know, DJ's contract is going to get pretty ugly. I mean, there are a lot of teams that I think should have taken a flyer on him, but just the fact that he kind of fell out of the rotation at the end of the year, I think, really hurt his value. But I think he could be good, and he's got some upside to be, like, a very good backup point guard even. I think he had a 25% usage last year.
Yeah, I will save – I have a mini rant on the Trey Burke issue from Utah's perspective. I will save that for when we talk about Utah, but I agree with you. The other signing, which I also really like from what I know about him, is Thomas Satoransky signed 3 years, $9 million. And why I love this kind of a deal is because, from a team perspective, is that he is a restricted free agent at the end of it. So what that means is he's at a low wage. I think it's very reasonable. And at the end of it, if you like him, you can bring him back, of course, if he doesn't choose to go to Europe or something else. And so that gives the Wizards more power. And why I like that for him is that he's a little bit older, so you can get control of the rest of his prime through that RFA.
Yeah, that 3-year, $9 million deal, he was a previous draft pick of them in the second round, and I think he could be an excellent backup point guard. He also could fit with someone, maybe like he and Burke could even play together. Satoransky is about 6'7". He's got some bounce, too, off of 1 foot. Excellent passer, played very well in the European Championships as the Czechs surprised in advancing further than expected in that tournament. And not a great shooter, so he's someone who probably needs to have the ball in his hands on the second unit. But I think him playing together with Beal as well could work very well. That's what Washington has done a lot in playing Beal on the second unit. They could have some length there. I think he could. He's not going to be a great defender, but I think he could be pretty decent. And so with Nicholson now, I think is going to be their backup four. Nicholson did improve last year by extending out to the 3-point range, less long twos. Needs to improve his defensive effort for sure. But I think they've got some more scoring now on this second unit than they've had in a long time. They've always struggled to score whenever Wall was out of the game. And with Burke, Satoransky, Nicholson, now they've got some guys. They've got two good centers, too, that they can always have in, as well as a true center. They could kind of, especially when Nene was hurt, they would really have to be playing like Drew Gooden at backup center. They couldn't stop anyone on those backup units. So I think actually the Wizards should be better next year now that you look at this. I mean, they are going to miss Dudley, but I think that they, with what they've been able to do, they still have $6.3 million left, and it would have been nice if, you know, they could have jiggered things around a little bit to keep Dudley's $8 million cap hold in and re-signed him to that 3-for-30, but they still, what else do you think they should be looking at with that $6.3 million? Sessions is gone now to Charlotte.
I'd love for them to add a kind of another point guardy guy, just a lottery ticket that way. Maybe another center along the same lines, just kind of somebody, maybe like a more athletic, I like to use the word pogo stick type of center, where somebody who can run the floor and just kind of do those sort of things, because they don't really have that in the guys that they already have under roster. And, you know, just another just general swingman who could potentially sop up some minutes.
Yeah, I think they could use a little bit more on the wing still. You know, maybe like it could be an okay Gerald Green destination. Richard Jefferson, if they wanted to pay him more than the Cavs can. The Cavs can only pay him 120% of last year's salary at the minimum. Or they could give him their taxpayer mid-level, which I don't think they want to do for Jefferson. So they could maybe go there. Brandon Rush could maybe be another guy. They could even bring back Alan Anderson as well, potentially, at age 33, at an injury-plagued year with the Wizards, as so many people seem to. So they probably also, I don't think they need a third point guard because Satoransky and Burke can both do that. So they've got some options for sure. I might actually maybe look at like Markel Brown as a restricted guy, get some more athleticism on the wing with that money. That could also be a consideration.
Yeah, I like Markel Brown there. That could be interesting.
So, all right, this is kind of starting to run long here. Let's take this one to a part two. We will get to still Sacramento, Brooklyn, Miami situation, the Clippers, lots of other signings, and then we got to, of course, go through every team's cap space and talk about who is left. Part two should be coming out shortly after part one does. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. Don't forget about our sponsors for this episode, the Naked 3D Body Scanner, the world's first home fitness scanner. You can find out more about that at naked.fit/capspace. Make sure you enter that /capspace URL so they know that you came from us. And then Indochino, whether you are Boban size, Nate size, or Danny size, you can get a custom suit for $3.99 using that capspace code Indochino.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with part two shortly after this.